I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. As we celebrate Thanksgiving, the task of cooking food for family and friends is at the top of our plates. Today, I'll speak with Feeding America, an organization charged with feeding those that are food insecure here in the Inland Empire. We'll hear about their programs and holiday drives and learn how those in need can receive services. Also on the show, I'll speak with Kelly Bocanegra, president of the Assistance League of the Foothill Communities. Kelly shares details of how the Assistance League serves the community and about their upcoming annual Christmas Tree Brunch, which is their source of funding for their many philanthropic programs. My conversation with Feeding America and the Assistance League of the Foothill Communities are coming up next, right after the NPR newscast. This is Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is Stephanie Otero, CEO of Feeding America Riverside San Bernardino and serving the Inland Empire region. Welcome to Lifestyles, Stephanie.
Thank you so much for having me.
So share the mission of Feeding America for the Inland Empire. We know it's a national organization, but can you share what your specifics here and the mission for the Inland Empire region?
Absolutely. Our mission is to alleviate hunger in the Inland Empire. There are over 400,000 people who are food insecure in our region. Food insecure meaning that they don't have access to three meals a day. So our mission is to go in and feed those people and provide the access that they do have access to food.
And so you can't do that by yourself, I'm sure. Do you have access to the people, or do you work with other organizations that have access to the people? How does the whole system work?
Well, we do it through two ways. So one is we partner with local charities. We have close to 300. We call them community partners. And they all have various programs, after-school programs, residential shelters, food kitchens, and so forth. And they get the food from us, and they feed people directly. That's one of the ways. The second way is we have direct programs ourselves. We do emergency food distributions. We do mobile distributions. This is where we take it to a particular area in the community and distribute food directly. We have kids markets. We go to local elementary schools in high-need areas, and we distribute fresh produce once a month during the school year. We also have school pantries at local elementary schools. This provides access to children 5 days a week to have access to food. And we also run the USDA program throughout the Riverside County. So this provides temporary emergency food for those in need. Anyone in need can come to our website. If they type in their region, we will give them a list of local partners that are near them so they're not using their fuel and transportation to get to us in Riverside. If they are in the area, they can come in and get emergency food from us. And then we also give them a list of the local distributions that happen on a weekly basis so that they can go and get that food more regularly.
And when you talk about your school pantries, is that schools that have signed up with you, or all schools connected with you, or how does a school get connected?
So not all schools, but we work with the Paris School District right now. So that pantry actually benefits more than 7 schools directly. So each school that's interested has to sign up. There's a lot of paperwork involved just to make sure that we can get it up and running, because it does rely on volunteers at the school to make sure they're distributing that food to those children in need.
And what are your costs? I know you have fundraisers. Are the fundraisers to buy the food? Tell me how the organization works in that aspect. Or is it really to pay for the gas to transport? Share your part.
So one of the things that makes our food bank really unique is we never purchase food. So all the funding that we do get is to really move our food, which is basically filling our trucks, covering staff, covering repairs and maintenance for equipment, covering our rent and so forth, so that we can move the food to the people who need it. So one of the great things about us is that 98 cents of every dollar donated goes directly into our programs.
If one of our listeners is maybe a CEO of a company or their communications officer of a company, how would they get involved? And I know people tend to support during Thanksgiving and Christmas this time of year, the holiday season, but we know people are hungry all year round. How would businesses get involved? What are their options?
So there's so many different ways a business could get involved. Is one, they could host a virtual food drive that's done online where employees or staff can contribute money to actually purchase food. What that does is allow us to take the food that we have on hand and then distribute it to those in need, so it covers the cost for that. They could come in and volunteer and spend a day with us. We have a corporate building program called Succeed and Feed. And this is where they can come in, do some team building activities, and also help to sort our food, which is an essential part of what we have happening here at the food bank in order to distribute food. Obviously, just a corporate donation is also greatly appreciated.
My guest is Stephanie Otero. She is the CEO of Feeding America Riverside San Bernardino, basically helping out right here in our Inland Empire region. Are you partnering with grocery stores or grocery chains throughout the Inland Empire? Do you get older food? What's allowed and what isn't? Because, you know, something that maybe is damaged in the grocery store, but the food is still okay. I'm thinking like of soup or something. Can you share that legality of it?
There's a big misconception out in the public that the date that you see on a can in a grocery store means that you can no longer consume that product.
Okay.
And a lot of the food that we get in the food bank is either close to expiration or slightly past expiration. So we provide a lot of educational material to our partners and on our blog that there's a safe-to-eat consumption date that still makes product good beyond the expiration date. And it varies based on the type of product. But most of the product that we get, it can't be sold in stores because of that consumer perception on a lot of the products. So that is a lot of the product that we have donated to us.
But it's perfectly fine to consume or you wouldn't be sharing it?
Exactly. Still safe to consume.
And tell me how others, you know, most nonprofits are always in need of volunteers. Is that your organization as well? Or?
Yes, volunteers are the backbone of our organization. We move over 2.5 million pounds of food through our food bank every month. So we need volunteers Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. We also have some Saturday volunteer days. They allow us to feed the over 200,000 people that we do every single month. So volunteering their time is a great way to give back. Becoming a monthly donor, monthly donors really help us to sustain, not just during the holidays, but all year long to ensure that we can still continue to feed people. So many ways that they can help. Just advocating for us and promoting us on their own social media, sharing our page with other friends and relatives of theirs to really spread the word and let people know that we're here and the good work that we're doing.
And when they volunteer, are they volunteering at your facility there in Riverside?
Yes, that's correct.
As you just indicated, if you wanted to do kind of a private drive, let's say they live in Victorville and they want to feed the families there in Victorville. So would their private drive and would their efforts be given back to Victorville, or does it all end up going to you and you disperse?
So if someone was in Victorville and really wanted to help there, what we would do is pair them up with any partners that we have in that area and connect them in that way so that they can volunteer with any distributions that are taking place in that general area for them.
And I use Victorville as an example because it's further out from the inland,
right,
you know, from Riverside. So I'm just trying to understand that maybe others can help maybe within their community and still be effective.
Absolutely, yes.
And you've been doing this a few years now. Can you share some of the families or some of the stories that have come across your desk?
So many stories and, you know, so many heartbreaking stories. The one that kind of shines recently is we had a man come in. His name is Mike, and he had been homeless for about 2 weeks and just sort of felt lost and felt like there was no one there really to assist him and to help him. And by chance, he happened to find our food bank online and asked if he could come in and get some food. And we said, yes, of course, come in. So he took about 2 different buses and walked over 2.5 miles to come and get some food from us. And I happened to be in the warehouse that day and met him personally. And his story was basically that 10 years ago, he had made a mistake and he went to jail for it. And his family had disowned him. He'd just been released from jail 2 weeks earlier. When he came out, he had no money, he had no friends, no family, literally nowhere to turn to. Self-proclaimed, not a religious man, not faithful, had started to pray, come across our food bank, got some food from us. And on that same day, he happened to get a call. A residential facility that he had checked into earlier that morning had said there were no beds available. It would be probably about 6 months before he could have a room. He got a call while I was talking to him that a room had just become available that day. So, you know, he was in tears. I was in tears. We were both crying. And, you know, that's why we do what we do. There are so many people like Mike who really just need not a hand out, but a hand up, really have come across hard times in their life. You know, one of the things we say here at the food bank is we are all just, you know, one catastrophe, one disaster, one family emergency, one job loss away from being hungry.
And when people come in to you, to the store, to share their story or to ask for food like Mike did, do they have to show anything or is it just your doors are open and that can take place?
Yeah, absolutely. No information is required or requested. They come in, we don't turn anybody away, we don't ask any questions, and not everybody's comfortable with sharing their story as Mike was. And I did ask him, you know, can I share your story? Because I think it would really help other people, and he was more than willing to share. But, you know, we don't turn anybody away. Our partners don't turn anybody away. That's one of our philosophies, is we feed everyone in need who comes to us.
And now that the holidays are upon us, what are your plans, or what do you ramp up for the holidays?
So the holidays, we have so many different campaigns going on. We have many food drives happening right now with different community members throughout the Inland Empire who really want to help and give back. This is a time of year where everybody wants to volunteer and everybody wants to help. But as you mentioned, you know, people are hungry all year long. So it's really about getting people to commit to giving back to the community and those who need it all year long.
Thanks so much for what you do, and thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having us. Really appreciate it.
To learn more about Feeding America, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on Today's Show. After a quick break, I'll speak with Kelly Bocanegra, president of the Assistance League of the Foothill Communities, and hear details of their annual Christmas tree brunch. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is Kelly Bocanegra. She is the president of the Assistance League of the Foothill Chapters. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Will you share a little history about Assistance League? We know they're a national organization, and we have many chapters right here in our Inland Empire region. When did it all begin, and when did your chapter form?
Assistance League of Los Angeles was the first chapter, and they turned 100 years old this year. We became a chapter in 1953, but prior to that, we had been the Upland Junior Welfare League. We are currently one of 120 chapters nationwide, located in Rancho Cucamonga.
And what area do you serve?
We actually serve several communities from Upland, El Paloma, Rancho Cucamonga, Ontario, Montclair. We go as far down as Mountain View, parts of Fontana, and Etiwanda. So we have quite a large area that we service.
Now, each chapter is different. Every chapter has maybe different philanthropic projects. Your chapter has a few of them, including Operation School Bell, Assistance League Bears, and Fostering New Beginnings. Tell me about each of them. Let's begin with School Bell.
Okay. Operation School Bell is a program in which we clothe children in new school clothes. We take them to Kohl's of Upland at a scheduled appointment. This past year, we were able to clothe over 2,000 children with new school clothing. It is our signature program.
What about the Assistance League Bears? What's that?
Okay, AL Bear is a program in which we provide new teddy bears to first responders in several local agencies. We also provide them to San Antonio Regional Hospital and Kaiser Hospital in Fontana. We have just expanded into both of those hospitals' emergency rooms and day procedure facilities.
So you provide the bears, they're there, or are you there morning, noon, and night handing out the bears, or are they provided to the organization?
No, we're not there. As requested, we provide them for the different agencies, and they hand them out to children who are facing a traumatic situation, and every once in a while to an adult or a teenager.
Nice. So it probably brings a couple of smiles, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. We hear incredible stories about children who haven't been able to sit still, or they're crying when they're going to get an IV or a shot or something, and handing them the bear is kind of a distraction and a comfort, and they can settle down. We've had many nurses report on that to us.
Great. The one that I'm most interested in hearing about is the Fostering New Beginnings. Tell me about that in detail, if you can.
You bet. Fostering New Beginnings is a program in which we help children or young adults who are exiting foster care, usually at the age of 18, and they go out into independent living. And most of them go with literally what they can carry with them in a suitcase or a bag. So we partner with Aspiranet, which is a county agency who finds the housing for them and interviews these young people. And then when we provide them move-in baskets with all of their bedding and linen, pots and pans, absolutely everything that you can think of to help them start life on their own, and things we know that they would not be able to get, all brand new. We try to color coordinate, and if it's male or female, we try to, you know, anticipate that as well. So it's a fantastic program. We've heard from several of the young adults who have been a part of this program, and they tell us that what a relief it is to know that they just always wonder, how am I going to provide these things? I have this new place to live, but I don't have anything. So we even give cleaning supplies and grocery carts.
How did this project come about? Is this fairly new? I mean, many of the chapters have different philanthropic projects, as I indicated earlier. How did this one come to you?
This one came to us through one of our members. She foster children were near and dear to her heart. And originally, we gave them backpacks with just a few things for them to go out on their own. And then when we started partnering with Aspirinet, the county agency that helped these children, so this has been with us since the early 90s. We started this program.
Oh, so it has been with you for quite a while. Do you ever hear
it's
back from...
It's just evolved into this where we provide them with these large move-in baskets and bundles of bedspread and sheets and pillows and all of that.
Do you ever hear back from any of the recipients maybe a year or two later? Or have you heard back or any feedback?
Yes, we have. We had two guests at one of our regular meetings last year, and they were both recipients. And both of them, one of them had children, the other was one of 12 foster children who she was helping to look after some of her sisters and brothers. And they mentioned that they couldn't have done it without us, and they were so grateful.
Yeah, that makes it all worthwhile just when you hear mm-hmm. that you helped one child mm-hmm. or one young adult get through a trying time, I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm speaking with Kelly Bocanegra. She is the president of Assistance League of the Foothill Communities. Now, you indicated that you serve many different areas, including Montclair, Rancho, Ontario. How did the students or the children come to you, either for Operation School Bell to get the clothing, or what's the process, the referral process, that it comes to your doorstep?
Okay, we provide each school district with packets of information for the requirements of financial requirements and the dates we will be dressing the children, and the personnel at the school, either the school nurse, the health aide, or a liaison, gets in touch with us and says, I have so many children that need to be dressed, and we schedule them at different appointments. We do them Tuesdays and Thursdays through September and October in the evenings at their scheduled times. So far in September and October, dressed over 1,700 children this year. We hope to dress more in the spring as well. And their families bring them to us. They shop with their families. And for many of these children, it is their first time in a department store, you know, and they are very excited. The smiles are huge. Many of our people who come to us are, English is a second language. We work very hard to have translators there for them. We want them to be as comfortable as possible. And we provide them with a stipend and they get to shop and we help them stay within their budgeted amount. They also get a free book and a grooming kit.
I'm guessing that school liaison is pretty important because if they're not invested in the project, then maybe more students from that school don't get to partake?
Yes, yes. Some of the districts actually have, I know Upland Unified and Ontario have personnel in charge of this kind of thing for their entire districts.
Nice.
In the smaller districts that we serve, we serve 8 school districts, 95 schools, and within those schools, sometimes it is a small school, small district, so they do have a liaison. They are extremely important, and many of them, bless their hearts, show up to the dressings when they know their children are being dressed on a certain evening. The kids get so excited to see them, but they're well aware of people's financial or hardship situations. It's not always financial. It could be all of a sudden an illness, or somebody loses a job, or they have an accident, or, you know, it's not just always continued financial stress.
So in order to do all the things that your chapter is doing, there's got to be some fundraising. And I've never been to this event, but tell me about the Christmas tree brunch. It's going to be Sunday, December 8th in Ontario. What goes on there?
Well, this is actually our 41st annual Christmas tree brunch, and it is an incredible event. There are 12 showcases around the room, up on risers, beautiful trees, decorated, lots of fun gifts and treasures under the tree that are included, and we sell opportunity tickets. They're $1 each to try and win one of these showcases that's usually valued about $600. For example, you might get a Disney-decorated tree with Disneyland tickets as the main prize underneath it. Hmm. Our past presidents sponsor a tree that is absolutely gorgeous in the reds and the greens, and the glitz, and there's $500 cash with that tree to be won. We also have an incredible silent auction. We literally start next year's brunch, the day after the brunch. So December 9th, we'll be on a roll again for this coming year. But we have a wonderful silent auction with Christmas gifts, household gifts, toy gifts, sort of gifts for everyone there. And we also have a live auction. And every year, we have different live auctions. Sometimes it's a vacation, Lakers ticket. It varies. We also have cash drawings. There is a cash prize. I believe the tickets are $25 each or five for $100 for the cash prize. And there's a $1,500 prize and a $1,000 prize. So
wow.
People come, and then after they've purchased their ticket to the event, can have these other things there. We present our senior assistings, which is our youth group, grades 7 through 12, and our assistings who are in 12th grade and have spent many hours of community service through us are presented that night as well.
12 people are going to leave with that beautiful display, take that display into their home or into their work. Is that how it is?
Yes, it is.
Nice.
We actually have Golden Eagle Van Lines delivers them for us to a radius of, I think it is, 35 miles. They are delivered and all the goodies are delivered.
That must be a beautiful room when you walk into it.
Oh, it's fabulous. It's at the Doubletree by Hilton on Vineyard in the Empire Ballrooms. And we usually have a delicious lunch as well. So it's a fun, worthwhile activity. And it kind of launches the holiday for everybody, I think, because we're so early in the month.
And just ballparking it, what kind of money do you raise? I know you have a thrift store as well, but I'm guessing this is kind of your biggest fundraiser of the year that allows you to do much of what you do. The thrift store is probably ongoing income, you know, throughout the year. What kind of dollars do you raise at this event, and what do you hope to raise?
We hope to raise over $100,000. We have been over that mark for the last couple of years and have sold out with 500 guests. Generous, wonderful people who come to support us. That's our dream and our hope, and that's our plan, is to raise over $100,000 net.
Well, good luck on that. For those, maybe it's not just ladies, but maybe it's adults in your region, how would they get involved with Assistance League to become a volunteer?
We would love to know anybody who is interested in finding out more about Assistance League. The phone number they would call would be 909-987-2813, and they leave us a message and say they're interested in finding out more about Assistance League, and we are then happy to call them back, and we invite them to learn more about it. We have an orientation chairman who will talk with them about what we do, the requirements as members, and what we do to spend money and what we do to make money and see if that interests them.
Perfect. Well, I wish you much success. It sounds like if this is your 41st one, you guys have it under control and you know what you're doing. And
yes.
I hope it raises the money you're looking for. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
To learn more about the Assistance League of the Foothill Communities, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on today's show. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take the show on the go. If you have a topic or an idea for a segment, leave me a message at our website, you know it, kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. Thanks to all who make this show possible, including Sharina Wadd, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Enjoy your Thanksgiving weekend and be safe. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.